There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Football Belongs, an epilogue, if you will. I'm your host, David Davutovich, and I'm joined by two authors and a Matilda for this special recording. First, my award-winning podcast co-host and Football Belongs author, John Diddlitzer. Welcome back.
Great to be back, David. Not so much an epilogue as a chapter two almost, or the new frontier.
I like it. Hey, how's your life changed after becoming an award winner?
Yeah, it's been the talk show circuit has been so busy. I've just, you know, racked up my appearance fee from, you know, $0 to $0. So I'm going all right.
Excellent. Well, could be another award in the offing. Fiona Crawford was one of our esteemed guests on the original series, and she's back with the ink still drying on her latest book release, The Matilda Effect. The academic also co-authored the book Never Say Die, The 100-Year Overnight Success of Australian Women's Football. Welcome back, Fiona.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
And you're playing on one leg, a la Sam Kerr. Thanks for joining us under the circumstances.
Yes, I have to credit you guys for actually getting me up and running. There were some tech issues, and I was down for the count for a little bit with it. I've been felled by the flu that I think all of us who've been traipsing around the country supporting the Matildas have caught. So, but I've got the cold and flu tablets, and I'm good to go.
She's passed her late fitness tests. And speaking of fitness tests, we have a Matilda in the house. She was very close to making this World Cup squad. She has 8 Matildas caps to her name. She's an A-League women's star. She's completed her Bachelor of Business at Deakin University. Is there anything she can't do? Emma Checker, g'day.
How are you going, Dave?
Going well. How have you enjoyed this World Cup?
Oh, I mean, it's hard to even put into words what it's done. I think I expected big things, but I don't think any of us could have truly anticipated what has ended up unfolding. It's been a massive couple of weeks, and like all Australians, I think I've hardly slept, and, you know, I'm looking forward to recalibrating, but just embracing it.
Yeah, we've got September to do that. Now, we're riding the crest of this FIFA World Cup wave, and we felt it apt to revisit these podcasts. For those unfamiliar with the Football Belongs premise, author John Diddlitzer chose 9 football matches to cover 9 defining themes. We encourage you to go back and listen to the original Football Belongs series, for they include many timeless themes and anecdotes. However, the relevant gender equality episode from last time focused on a game that did not happen, the Matildas' mooted 2015 tour of the US, a line in the sand moment that changed the course of women's sport here and abroad. This time, we're up and about from the outset as we celebrate this whirlwind month where the Matildas are front and back pages, knocking the evening news from its 6 p.m. slot and moving AFL games to the chagrin of some, let's kindly call them, narrow-minded folk.
Matilda mania has intensified, with tens of thousands of people arriving this week for a game which will inject millions of dollars into Brisbane's economy. Now, the match only lasts 90 minutes, but the legacy of our golden girls could last a lifetime.
More than 70,000 people are expected here at Stadium Australia for the do or die match. A win will see the Matildas through to the quarterfinals.
What an impact the Matildas are making, not just on football, but across the country right now.
Morning. Welcome to Sunrise. Guess what?
Two codes could unite on Saturday with plans to wear the Matildas clash with France as an AFL curtain raiser.
We are yet to receive official confirmation. FIFA has approved this plan. The finer details still being worked over. The AFL making this extraordinary move to air the Women's World Cup quarterfinal on the big screens at the MCG before the Carlton and Melbourne blockbuster on Saturday. The AFL has always been reluctant to promote rival codes, but it appears the league is seizing an opportunity here to jump on the Matildas bandwagon.
The 2023 World Cup campaign and the Matildas' exploits touches on key Football Belongs themes, specifically gender equality and major events. We'll dissect the impact and legacy of this World Cup through Matilda's lens in a moment. But John, I want to start with you to provide the context. So the band is back. Let's reflect on the Football Belongs series. Why? Where did the idea come about and how did it unfold?
Yeah, I think what we tried to do through the series was identify universal themes of the Australian experience. And we, as you said, we noted nine specific themes and we allocated a match that told the story of each of those themes. And one of the themes was what we called Getting Equal, which was the narrative thread of Australian women through Australian life over the past century and how closely that's mirrored the experience of Australian women footballers. And I think what we're seeing in real time is that shift playing out in two distinct areas. One is the chapter we did on gender equality and how that's almost been bookended now, how you had the game that never happened in 2015, which was indicative of the fights that women have had to have for some sense of legitimacy. And now you're seeing 8 years later that legitimacy on the global stage in absolute terms, unequivocal terms. So it'd be interesting to unpack that 8 years and see what's changed in Australia during that time and how the Matildas helped make that happen. And then the other one's this notion of major sporting events was also a major chapter of ours and how Australia has unfailingly embraced major sporting events. And we discussed the context of the Asian Cup in 2015 and how we won that game and how Australian football has been great at the Sydney 2000 Olympics and 1956 Olympics, yet post these wonderful events would never quite capture the lightning in the bottle for our game. And that, I think, that, look, throwing this forward, it's a discussion about how we do that and how we actually leverage what we've done over the past 8 years, not just the last 8 weeks, the last 8 years, for the long-term benefit of the game and the nation. So it's exciting to revisit it, I think. We'll focus on the Australia versus Canada game because I think that speaks volumes for where the game's at.
Emma Checker, you were among the Matildas cohort that stood bravely in Sydney at the steps of Football Australia for that line in the sand moment, alongside a bunch of Matildas who are part of this World Cup squad today. Can we just get you to reflect on that moment in time and I guess linking it to this current World Cup and what impact it's had?
Yeah, look, I mean, at the time it was honestly one of the hardest things I feel like I'd ever done. I wasn't at an age where I was necessarily a senior player in the national team, let alone even domestically. And so I feel like reflecting, it took quite a lot of bravery to actually face up and stand by that. And I'm glad I did because even though it was hard, I knew it was right. And it was in a time where I'd been in and out of camp, hadn't really cemented a spot. And my worry was that if I take that leap, that that impacts selection. And, you know, I was so excited. It was my chance to go to America, play against the best team in the world. And so I think separating that from the progression of women's sport and the team was, it was actually really difficult as, from memory, I think I was 19. So It was a really interesting moment where I was so torn, but I'm glad I went with my gut and what felt right. And, you know, looking back now to see how much has changed since that moment, it's actually really remarkable. It took longer than we would have liked initially, and I think the early steps from 2015 were slow. But if you look at now, we wouldn't be here now without that. And I think that's something that's always going to be a really defining moment in this journey.
Fiona, you joined us last time for this episode, but I guess in the context of the current FIFA World Cup and everything that's going on with the Matildas and world football, how do you reflect back on that 2015 moment in time?
Yeah, absolutely. For me, it is a bit like Emma's saying, it was a line in the sand. And when they announced the strike, I have to admit, I felt physically ill. I was terrified for the players because I just thought, it's, you know, there's one national team, and particularly as women, you don't ever want to be seen as being difficult. So for them to have stood up and taken the strike as they did, look, I just didn't know how it was going to play out. And I was so heartened that it came off really positively. I think the fact that the Australian public and the media really got behind them, once they started to understand just how little the players were being paid and how much was being asked of them, that sort of that upswing from the media and the public really definitely helped get that across the line. But wow, what a game-changing moment, because I think, yeah, like Emma's saying, I don't think the 2019 pay parity would have even been imagined as being possible, let alone gotten across the line, if they hadn't taken that stand in 2015.
Okay, let's move on to the Matildas Canada, the match in question. Now, John, that's the one that you have selected on this occasion. It was the final group match for the Matildas at Melbourne Rectangular Stadium, a resounding 4-0 win for the mighty Matildas. What made this game so unique in a football belongs context, John?
Yeah, I mean, I think, I think a lot of us are still processing the importance of this game, and it'll play itself out over weeks, months, years. I think it's special for a few reasons. I think what we're seeing across society at the moment is this fight for space. And I use the word fight because at the moment society can be very combative, and a lot of the issues can be polarising because people feel they're being shouldered out of their space in society, which is, I think, is wrong. I think what we're aspiring to is give everybody the opportunity to be who they are on equal footing in our society. I think that's the universal or the uniform aspiration of most of us. Nobody wants to see, well, for the most part, most reasonable people don't want to see good people not given an opportunity in society. So I think at the moment we're going through this tension, if you like, of people shouldering one another or trying to get ahead, but everyone's now jostling for their voice. And I think when I watch the Matildas play, I wonder why they're resonating so much with everybody, or why they're so universally loved. And a part of me thinks that people look at that team and they're an amalgam of Australian society. Everybody can look at that team and see themselves in that group of players. So regardless of ethnicity, culture, religion, sexuality, you look at that team and you see a role model, you see somebody you can aspire to. And I say that for boys and men as well, or more so boys, because every boy grows up thinking they can be a sports star one day. And the fact that Sam Kerr being the sports star, or Emma Checker, or Caitlin Ford, is broadly irrelevant to a young boy. They just see somebody at a big stage going, wow, that can be me. Historically though, that hasn't been the case for girls, because all the only sports stars they've had to look at in a professional team context are men. So they've got that additional threshold issue, is can that actually be me? Regardless of whether I want to be, can I actually achieve that? I think the Matildas now have really pushed through a lot of that and shown there is, if you do things properly, there is a space for everyone in our community. So I think that's a massive, critical mass of interest and affection for this team, which is a big part of it. The next point for me is this trajectory of women's football more generally, and I'd be interested in Fiona and Emma's view once I've shared my own perspective on it, which is if you look at the continuum of male sport, you know, it started in the 1800s, and teams were formed for the most part to give, you know, energetic young boys something to do in their spare time.
Get tired,
them out and get them ready for life as a gentleman. And over time, it evolved into this billion-dollar industry called, you know, football, for example. So that was the continuum of men's sport. Women's sport has been on this continuum, which is vastly different. And for the most part, you know, for the most part of the last century, it's been invisible or diminished. Okay, there was a shift when, you know, some foundational steps were built through what I'd consider to be corporate social responsibility. Hey, it's the right thing to do, so let's do it, you know? And then that evolved. The next step for me was, okay, there's a benevolent self-interest. Okay, hang on, if we actually give women a chance, maybe there's some funding in it for us, maybe there's some sponsors we can sell, and it becomes what I say benevolent self-interest, because there's something in it for us. But I think what I saw on Friday night was this next step, which is the intrinsic value of women's sport, aside from all of those other factors. It had nothing to do with CSR. It had nothing to do with benevolent self-interest. It was just an incredible sporting event intrinsically. And that's something that men's football has taken for granted for a generation now, is that people go to those games because they're going to go there and be entertained and see this incredible sporting contest. I've seen heaps of women's games that are intrinsically wonderful sporting events. Emma played in one in the last A-League women's final that was incredible. But it's never had that mainstream cut through as a legitimately standalone sporting event. And on that Monday, was it Monday night or what night was it? I can't remember.
Night's the same during the World Cup.
That game and the reaction of the crowd to that game was purely one of sport in the purest sense. And that's, I think, a massive shift in women's football. So that's why, for me, it stands alone as one of these classic matches we've discussed in the past, because it says something about Australia now. It says something about we've gone on this change of let's do it because it might be the right thing to do, or we don't want to be embarrassed, or we're going to be shamed if we don't, to, geez, this is unbelievable.
Check the run. The cross is not a bad one. And it pops here for Hayley Razzo! And Australia have the dream start.
Fiona, can I get your views and get you to expand on John's thoughts? And you were there at that Matildas Canada match the other night.
Yeah, absolutely. I went into that match feeling, I was feeling pretty flat actually heading in. We know obviously Canada were the Olympic champions. We know they beat us last year in two friendlies and they kind of dismantled us. So I thought, wow, the stakes are so high and we're in real trouble here of not making out of the group. And I was worried about conservative media's headlines of what that might look like if, you know, host nation goes out, crashes out at the group stage. I was very, very nervous going into the match. And yet what we saw, as JD was saying, was just extraordinary. There was a moment where Ellie Carpenter went to hype up the crowd as she went to do a throw-in. Yeah. And it was like an electric current went through the crowd. I don't know if you remember that moment. Vividly. But there was something. There was only 30,000 people there because obviously we were in a tiny stadium in Victoria. Don't get me started on that. But
they would have sold out the MCG twice.
I know. I do wonder if there's some, you know, male administrators from AFL and other codes who are starting to think, oh, we might have made a mistake there. But anyway, that's a whole other podcast. but yeah, there was something really extraordinary about that. And for me, even going in, because obviously I'm interested in football and the intersection of gender equality and some of those complexities around it. And we had in our group Canada, who is a country quite similar to us. They are competing against other football codes. The women's team has not had a lot of support. They haven't really had a strong domestic league, so most of their players have been having to play overseas. And they'd come into the tournament having to battle their federation. They didn't really even have an established collective bargaining agreement. So they were kind of in the same position as we were in 2015 when we were having to go on strike. And if you also count in that Nigeria, who'd given us a red-hot run for our money, and also having to fight their federation over lack of pay and funding. So there were all these... the stakes were really high, both in terms of us... making it out of the group just from a sporting context, but also about what that meant for us and for the teams we were competing against in terms of actually being able to make a career out of this. So what we saw kicked it to a level where I think there is no excuse now for any of those federations to not get behind women's football and to really inject some funding and some serious support to it.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Emma, I imagine you would have had a million emotions going through you on that evening. Can I get you to expand on those comments and reflect on that evening in particular?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was an interesting way to be involved in the game. I actually commentated it, and I think initially I asked not to be on it because I wasn't sure how I could handle the emotions of watching and also trying to commentate. So
we've lost the co-commentator.
It was a unique one for me, but I think, you know, when I pulled back from, like, even separate to the commentary, just watching, for me, things that stood out were, this was the first time you look in a stadium and you see so many, not just young girls, but young boys with like Kerr and Ford and Catley on their back. And we've never seen this before. And I think it's, you know, we speak about the reach that we have and what we're capable of doing, but I think it was the first time we've like truly seen it unfold. And I think if you look early on in the tournament, yeah, we were getting really good numbers, but the shift of the colour in the stands and the jerseys and the way that people were actually rocking up to the, it was different. So there was more buy-in by this point. And I think it goes to show that even though it was like true Aussie spirit in a sense that we all knew we'd gone down to Nigeria, but there was still something about everyone in that stadium that had belief. And I think, you know, we always talk about the never say die mentality. And I think as this is my player hat coming on, like as a player, you believe in it, but the public don't, you know, there's often still a barrier between them understanding what it actually means. And I think this was the first time that they've like connected with the fans and the public in that way where they've been like, wow, like that really does mean something. And to come out and do that against the reigning Olympic champs is no easy task. And it's not a fluke though at the same time either. It's that is us with our backs up against the wall in true Aussie spirit to come out and say, well, we do never say die. So I think for me, it was like a turning point in seeing the way that fans actually understand what that means.
Yeah, if I could just intersect there, I think Emma's spot on where you started talking about the actual performance itself. It was almost, I won't say stereotypically Australian, but it's the way we visualise or we our mind's eye visualises how Australians, how we want our Australian teams to play football. And that's why the game's seminal as well. It captured for that 90 minutes plus is if we could script the way we want our national team to play, that's it. And even though we only had like 39 or 40% possession, we were so well organised, we were aggressive, we were front-footed, yeah. We were attacking with pace, we were going after every ball.
Sense of purpose.
Yeah, there was a real unity behind it. As Fiona said, you know, Ali goes to the crowd and revs them up. And so it was really fascinating that they chose that moment with so much on the line, and Fiona articulated it really well. You had, you know, the critical mass of potential criticism coming the way the team, the same way the US women's national team's copping it now.
Yep.
You know, so every single thing Megan Rapinoe has done over the past 15 years has resulted in her scoring a penalty. You know what I mean? So this was all on the line, and for them to choose that moment to play so well and in a way that was so aligned with the way the fans want to see their national teams play just took it to another level. And I think we'll always look back on that night as something special that we unlocked as a football community, as a football team, what we want our sport to look like. And we've got to try and really build on that.
Steph Catley, no problems. The cherry on top for the Matildas.
So many great moments on that evening. One of my favourite moments, or one that hasn't been discussed, was after the game. You know, when the players who didn't play much or were on the bench, they do their, you know, run-throughs, their training session after the game. And they were still celebrating with the fans and, you know, getting their arms up in the air and pulling the dance moves. It was just a party atmosphere even an hour or so after the final whistle. I just wanted to ask you on a personal level, Emma. You're one of a host of players who, you know, over the last 2 years had obviously eyed off this World Cup. You wanted to be part of this World Cup squad, and you had genuine ambitions and claims to being part of the squad. You were in a host of Matilda's camps over the last few years. Can I just get you to talk to the emotion of watching these games as a player that could have been there, you know, in some people's eyes perhaps should have been there? How have you felt on a personal level?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think, I mean, what was it? I was in, my last camp was from memory August last year, so it's really not that long ago. And when you talk over the last 12 years being in and out, I guess this is, you know, as a player, this is the pinnacle and this is the one place you want to be. And for me, in my career, the one thing I've, you know, always wanted is to play at a major tournament, and what better one to do it than at the home World Cup. So I think when you start as a player to feel like, you know, things are changing and your role within selection is starting to change, it's hard. And I think for me, though, I've been in this system for so long that the way I handle that has changed. And if, you know, my younger self wouldn't have been able to deal with it in the same way. But one, I've been in this position before where I've had to deal with the hardship of not being picked. But two, I also have a broader lens that's good enough to you know, see the bigger picture and still enjoy this for what it is. So I think I'm fortunate that I am at an age of maturity where I can just embrace this, even though it is disappointing. I think my personal disappointment can be completely separate to what this means more broadly, and I've actually loved every minute of it, and I feel like I've honestly probably watched almost every single game. I don't think I've slept since the day it started, not properly anyway. So I think, yeah, for me, it's just about I had a choice. I either fully dive into this and embrace it and realise that I've also still been part of what we've created. And so I think that for me is also really rewarding, that I may not be the one out there on the field, but I've still contributed a lot to being here. And so for me, that's something that I'm really proud of and makes me feel like I'm still part of it with them, even though my way of contributing is different to being in the squad.
Fiona, we'll get your views in a moment, just to compare the Canada game to the other games the Matildas played. You've covered all of them. But firstly, John, I just wanted to get your views on the difference between the Canada game compared to the other two games, particularly the group games.
Yeah.
And also, if it didn't pan out against Canada, would we be having this discussion right now? What would the fallout have been?
Yeah, look, probably further to Fiona's, to answer the second part of that question now, probably to Fiona's point, we'd probably be having we might be having this discussion, but it might be framed differently, which is maybe women's football hasn't progressed as much as we would have liked because of the blowback that an unsuccessful team might receive, at the same level of misogyny, the same level of criticism, unfair criticism is still labelled against female athletes, because every time they fail, there's some other external reason for doing so. It can't just be a tactical flaw. It's got to be something else. They spoke out, or they want more money, or there's some extraneous reason to explain a loss. So maybe we'd be discussing that we haven't matured as a society. But I think the evidence of that night, again, it's important not to get too wrapped up in the result, because I felt going into the game there was so much goodwill for the team. And I suppose to contrast the games, I was in the Brisbane game for the loss to Nigeria, and I didn't, again, I don't know if this is the difference between Brisbane and Melbourne. I think, Fiona, you might have to correct me or otherwise.
I feel I'm going to have to be defensive immediately. Yeah. Whatever. I don't even know what's coming.
Yeah. I felt a little bit, it was a bit more of a theatre-goer type of atmosphere. Maybe because Suncorp's so cavernous. It's a big 50,000-seater stadium, and I really felt the audio levels didn't rise until stoppage time in the second half. So Alana scored to get back to 3-2. Then the last 3 minutes was quite raucous.
Yeah.
But prior to that, I felt it was a little bit subdued. Maybe that was the nature of the game. It was a pretty cagey type affair, stop-start, because of the way Nigeria set up and then just went bang, bang, bang. It sort of killed. It was a perfect away performance from the Nigerians, maybe.
I've never heard 49,000 people be so silent as when Nigeria scored
that
goal.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I could add to that, though, I don't know that the Sydney game was that much better. I mean, there were 75,000 people there. So I don't even think it was contained to Brisbane. There was something special that happened in that Melbourne match against Canada. But the other matches, I think the crowd really gets excited when it looks like we're going to win, but I don't know that they're making crazy amounts of noise.
What I felt was a point of difference with this game. And I've probably one of the luckiest people in Melbourne in that I've probably been at 95% of big games at Amy Park. You know, through my different jobs, I've been to 90% of the Melbourne derbies. I've been to all the early grand finals that have been there.
So you've never paid for a ticket?
Socceroos games. I play with blood, sweat and tears, my friend. Don't you worry. So I'm quite fortunate in that regard, and that game was on. That game, or Thursday night, whatever it was just.
Just incredible.
It was otherworldly. It really was. It was on par with the very best football experiences I've ever had, and that again speaks to that point. It was an intrinsically magical sporting event. It had nothing to do with anything else. And that's where I think that's why it's so special. It finally cut through some of the prejudices and caveats that were attached to women's team sport. And again, for the record, I'll carve out tennis and golf because they've been great with women's sport for, you know, decades now. But professional team sports, particularly in the football codes, is the last frontier for women athletes. And I think there's no doubt on the evidence of, was it Wednesday night again? Or was it?
Sunday.
But yeah, that was a special. That's why it's probably different a bit. No, yep. I'm glad Fiona sees that as well, is that I just felt a different energy around that game, going to the game, just the whole build-up. And I don't think it's uniquely Melbourne. I think it was the actual nature of the game and the stadium and just it was called for a defining, the crowd being galvanised, the nation being galvanised, the call for them to say, we are your 12th man / woman, 12th player, and we're going to back you all the way. And, yeah, it was just magical.
There was so much at stake and the margins were so fine. It's,
Ellie's heel.
Yeah. Yeah. Could have really gone either way going into it, but in the end it was a resounding win. Now, I wanted to get your views on the broader World Cup and I guess looking at the Matildas through a broader lens. It was a slow build-up. We referenced it earlier to the World Cup. I think if you compare it to, say, the Sydney Olympics, like there was so much more publicity leading into an event such as the Sydney Olympics. The outcomes, I think, will be very, very similar. But when you look at where we're at now, we're talking about AFL games being moved, Matilda's games being screened at AFL venues and outside of Suncorp Stadium and Sydney Olympic Park. The Channel 7 nightly news moved from its 6 p.m. slot. I don't remember the last time that's happened. A 6.5 million reach for the Denmark game. Matilda shirts have outsold Socceroos shirts 2-1 during the World Cup. It outrated the AFL and NRL grand finals as well as the State of Origin, and we've still got a bit to go. Extraordinary to think where we may be at should the Matildas get to the World Cup final, when they get to the World Cup final. Fiona, I just wanted to start with you. As an author of two books that are, hugely relevant to the context of this occasion, how do you feel about this, looking at it through a bigger picture?
Yeah, I really feel like we're in uncharted territory, like you're saying, is where this is kind of pinch me stuff for everyone who's been involved in women's football. I think we all knew it had the potential, but it had never been given a chance to be realised. I mean, the matches were not broadcast. They did not manufacture jerseys for sale. They did not put games on in stadiums large enough for us to sell the kind of tickets that we've sold. When they finally done that, we have smashed all of the records, and that is just absolutely wild and heartening. Even at the beginning of the tournament, media, I will say it's mostly international media who contacted me, and I will say it's mostly male journalists, but they were asking me questions that you could tell the angle was still about whether women's football was as good as men's or whether it really deserved the kind of funding that it was receiving. I think those questions have kind of gone away as the tournament's gone along because these figures have absolutely blown everyone away. You can't argue with them, even one of them, and they're just stacking up by the day.
Emma, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's like sometimes I don't even know if I've fully processed what's actually happening, and I'm not sure that, I mean, we're in the moment of it, and it's probably not until we reflect upon it once it's done that we actually realise the true magnitude of it. I think it's hard to believe we're here in some, ways, but in other ways it's not, because we've always known that this is what we're capable of. And I think my player hat again coming on is, it's been a frustrating journey because we know that we're capable of producing something that's greater than how it's being perceived. And I think for a long time it was a perception thing, and we've been capable of this standard and level for a long time. It just hasn't been seen in the same way. And I think, like JD's been saying, that Canada game was really groundbreaking in the way that it turned heads and shifted the narrative. But I think it's also just people's eyes are now open. I think we've had, closed eyes to what is actually in front of us for a long time. And this hasn't just happened overnight. This has happened over such an extensive period of time. And as players, we've always believed in the product that we're producing on the field. And it's just so rewarding to realise that we're now in a place where I feel like we can't go backwards from here in the sense that it's too big of a step forward that and too many people have changed their lens and changed the narrative that this has to create change. And my biggest concern was that, all right, if things go well, then what? Like, are we really going to capture the goodness that this brings? But I feel like what has been achieved and, you know, like Fiona's saying, in terms of the stats and results in those cases, we can't ignore that. And it's been seen by too many people now that there just has to be big change.
John, you've seen and been involved in some really dark moments for Australian football, broadly speaking. But, you know, when you hear some of those stats and facts and see how it's unfolded, how do you feel?
Yeah, I think it raises the bar. I think Emma captured it really nicely now that the gates swing back the other way and it puts an onus on everybody within football to, you know, lightning's been captured in the bottle and we have to now leverage that as much and broad and as widely as we can. Now, one of the chapters we spoke about, one of the episodes we previously recorded, was major sporting events. And it shouldn't surprise anybody that the Women's World Cup has been a roaring success. We always knew it would. We never had any issues. I certainly never doubted for a moment that we wouldn't sell out games and have the sort of crowds that we're having now. We saw it in 2015 in the Asian Cup. I mean, I was sitting at games between... the best example is Denmark versus Haiti. So they're not, you know, I could be wrong here, but I don't get a sense of this roaring Danish community through Australia, and certainly the Haitians at best are a peripheral community within Australian life, yet they sell out Perth, you know. So our love for major sporting events is well known. And the challenge we faced post the Asian Cup was we've ticked the boxes the same way we've done now. Great crowds, great events. Our team did as well as they could possibly have done. That's not to suggest the Matildas don't have more in the tank, but in the Asian Cup, the Socceroos went all the way and won a dramatic game against a fancy South Korea in extra time with Ange as their coach and Timmy Cahill playing. So that's a fairy tale as well. And we could have a fairy tale of greater magnitude now. But what was the actual legacy of 2015's Asian Cup win? Some would say zero, because within 12 months, we were back to square one as a game. Fans walked out of stadiums. We're having governance brawls. The Matildas had to go on strike to draw a circle on that. So 8 months later, so let's really focus on how we escalate the game, build the game, in through the next phase. And I'll just touch on a point that Fiona and Emma raised is I've always said the beauty of football, the only difference between men's and women's football is the speed and the power. Okay, the men probably hit the ball quicker and can run faster for the most part. I think heading, women are clearly better based on the goals I've seen this World Cup and me being at Melbourne Victory Training the last few weeks. but that's it. And I would say that's only such a small part of why people are drawn to sport. People are drawn to sport for the socio-cultural reasons. They're drawn to sport for the soap opera of it. They're drawn for the theatre. They're drawn for the aesthetics. And if you can build all those things, they're already there. You've just got to tell those stories. And I look at that Matildas team and I see, if you just take our front three from the recent games, Mary Fowler, Emily Van Egmond, Sam Kerr, these are three incredible stories, all totally different in how they were drawn to the game, basically playing the same position, but three players side by side in attack whose stories could not have been more different. You know, the daughter of an Irish missionary, the granddaughter of an Indian migrant who loved AFL, and someone whose dad coached an A-League championship in 2008, 2009. Like, that's us, you know, so it's incredible. And that's why I think it's resonated. That's why if we get it right and tell these stories and keep reinforcing them, tipping moments such as these will inevitably happen. So let's keep doing that.
Let's stick with the major events and legacy theme. Ange Postecoglou talked about the legacy or lack thereof from the 2015 Asian Cup. When he joined us a couple of years ago in the original Football Belongs
before
podcast.
He was a world-conquering gaffer.
We had him before he was famous.
We had him.
He was at Yokohama F. Marinos. Extraordinary to think what's happened in the last couple of years.
Look at you and I. We're still here doing the same thing as coaches first. Bloody hell.
We've gone backwards. Let's recap what he had to say back in 2021.
Biggest part of the legacy. When we're talking about 2023, I can tell you something now, that it will be a hit. It will be an unbelievable tournament. You will have everybody watching, the whole nation, even mainstream media, AFL people. They will love it because they've all got daughters. They've all got people who will be dragging them, and they'll love it because of what they see, the spectacle it is.
Wow. Wow. Extraordinary. That was 2 years ago, Ange Postecoglou. That wasn't today. That wasn't yesterday. That wasn't last week. That was 2 years ago, Ange Postecoglou talking about the 2023 World Cup.
Yeah, it's interesting when you hear that because it's, again, it's like anyone within the football world has had this true belief that this is what the outcome will be. But I think it's, you know, about convincing everyone else that this product is so great. And I mean, it's actually really nice hearing that from Ange because it just goes to show that the buy-in collectively is we are united, whether that be through the Socceroos, the Matildas, domestic leagues, coaches that are abroad, players that are abroad. We all have this, you know, unified goal and belief that we can grow the game here. And I think, you know, he's spot on that everyone has invested, everyone with a daughter, with a son. It's not even just kids. We're talking adults that have never been to a game and now kitted up and supporting the team. So it's huge. It's really great to see.
Fiona, was that Postecoglou or Nostradamus?
Yeah, I know. Look, it's that goosebump kind of moment where, I don't know, maybe he had his own kind of Johnny Warren moment where he could predict the future. But yeah, I mean, I often think about, I mean, JD has said to me a number of times that for so long women's football was thrown in as the kind of bonus steak knives, which I thought was we didn't really know its value. And this tournament has, I don't think there's any question that we don't know the value of women's football anymore. We've now got the data to leverage into a whole other level and another era, I think, where we are normalising women's participation at all levels of the sport. So, yeah, it's transcended sport and it's transcended women's sport, and wow, I'm excited for the next couple of years.
He joined us on two podcasts. He clearly had more time up his sleeve back then. I reckon we might struggle to get him on this week anyway.
And if I can disclose some confidences here, we did originally reach out to him to partake and he politely declined, and then he heard the first couple of episodes and said, I'm in.
Correct.
So he also was Nostradamus about being an award-winning podcast series.
Correct. I don't think we've thanked him yet. We'll get back to him. Thank you, Ange. I'm sure you're listening. He did also talk about the legacy or lack thereof from the 2015 Asian Cup. Now, when we look at this FIFA World Cup, there's far more political engagement this time around, particularly around federal government level, led by the Prime Minister himself, Anthony Albanese. John, what are your thoughts this time? Will it be the same or will it be different?
Well, that's the billion-dollar question. You know, we had a Prime Minister probably in 2015 who referred to Mike Jedinak as opposed to Mila Jedinak. I don't know if that was in charge of that term or whatever it was.
Wikipedia search.
No, but look, that's the billion-dollar question. How do we unlock the sorts of momentum that Fiona's been talking about? How do we unlock that? How do we, you know, the Matildas brand, the Socceroos brand, they'll always be where they are now. I don't think they go backwards from this. People will, at the very least, they'll be waiting every 4 years for this magical sugar hit. The question is what happens in those intervening 4 years, and that's where we need the A-League to step up. We need leaders within the A-League and FA and, you know, people with power, in positions of power, with power, to some degree to put their egos to one side, stop worrying about who gets the credit for things, and genuinely work towards shared success. You know, I think the A-League, I mean, I think about how great the A-League women is or can be. And the game, Emma, you played the penalty shootout, the 3-all draw against City last year City versus Victory last year was one of the best matches I saw that year. But there was about 400 people there and it was played on an AFL pitch in Cranbourne West. That's not clearly not good enough if we're going to capture or build on what's been happening over the past few weeks. So there's things like that, and that will require different stakeholders coming together to achieve these sorts of infrastructure outcomes. And that's a big part of it, having effective infrastructure for our teams, players, fans. You know, if you bear with him for a minute, I look at what we've done at Victory. For example, okay, we played Amy Park some games. The reason why we push hard to play at Amy Park is it gives players the best possible experience. The surface that Amy Park is, subject to monster trucks and Taylor Swift, amazing, okay? The change rooms, as Emma can attest to, the change rooms are awesome. There's plunge pools, there's gyms. It's, for a player, it's paradise. So they go to Amy Park and they love it. As a club, you look at it and go, oh, it's so expensive. It costs you tens of thousands of dollars more, possibly, maybe into the six figures. I'm not sure, but a stack load more to put that on. But you soak it up because you think it's important. Fans might get there early, might not, but ultimately it's an unfulfilling experience for the fans as a match day because there's 1,000 people in a 26,000-seater stadium. So the players don't get what they want out of the fan experience. The fans don't get what they want out of the match experience. Okay. The other side of it is you take it to a community pitch. Fans are close, maybe 1,000 seats, maybe 800 people in there. Nice little atmosphere. Kids get autographs after the game. But the pitch is terrible. The change rooms are awful. You're battling traffic to get there. Whatever it is, it's not a pleasant experience for the players and the officials. So where is this middle ground? When can we think strategically to say, okay, the plan for us is to develop facilities that allow us to put on the sorts of events that will create amazing moments. And that's where I think we've really got to get our thinking focused, is making sure that we get that event right. So we give the players what they need to play at their absolute best. That includes facilities, scheduling, so they're not playing at 3 in the Arvo, and also making sure the fan experience at A-League games is everything it can be.
Fiona, what legacy pieces are you hoping for from this World Cup?
Probably two things. I think the attitudinal change, and I think that's something we're going to see, we'll still be realising in 20 years' time. I was fascinated that Cathy Freeman, you know, turning up to see the players who she'd inspired to become Matildas, and what effect she was still having 20 years on from that race at the Sydney Olympics. Yeah, for me, it's the attitudinal change. For so long, women's football has been having to justify its existence or justify why it could or should receive some funding, and then also to have to justify it again. Like, just because it got something once, it didn't necessarily get it a second time. I think maybe that's going to shift a little bit, so I'm really excited about seeing that happen. I also just really want to see, like, the last of the firsts, because we are still talking so much. We're having to look backwards so much to explain how far we've come, and I really want to focus on the future and normalise women participating at all levels of the sport. I don't want to see the last of, you know, the first woman to be doing X job. I think I want to see not just one woman, but a bunch of women in there doing it. And I think we're going to start to see that off the back of this, but it might still take another 10, 20 years. So yeah, attitudinal change and last of the firsts.
Emma, you've been involved with most of the key stakeholders in Australian football, playing in the A-League. You've played for the Matildas, been involved with Football Australia, and now working with the PFA. What are you hoping for moving forward off the back of this World Cup?
Yeah, look, I mean, there's so many important things, and I think Fiona touched on a really great point attitude-wise. I think that is a really big one in terms of the legacy moving forward and the perception in the public, because the reality is that it does matter. And I guess another big one for me, though, is, you know, we keep touching on the fact that all of these players have played in the A-League, and I want to see the A-League grow. I want to see, you know, I want to see more bums on seats at those games. And I'm not just, for me, that then expands into A-League men's and A-League women. I think that needs to, the growth that we can experience in those leagues can be so great off the back of this kind of success. And, you know, we speak about it year after year about how we can do it. And JD makes a great point. Even as players, we always speak about, you know, what's the better option, playing on these incredible surfaces in these massive stadiums or playing in the boutique ones with a, you know, a lesser field, but the fans are right there. And I want to be at a point where we don't have to ask that question and we can just play and both of those boxes are ticked. And so for me, that would be one of the biggest things in terms of the National League that I think I would love to see. And it's then about, you know, the players' needs are met, the fans' needs are met, and what that then does for more growth. Like, that just triggers more growth. And I think it's a really fine line at the moment between how you meet the needs of both. So I would love to reach a place where we can meet both of those. And I think one last thing would just have to be the investment in grassroots. I think we have to recognise that these processes are only, you know, only as good as what's below them and what feeds into them. So I think the way that we treat those programs and the grassroots clubs and the investment into the young players is so important, because without that continued investment and greater investment, we don't continue to produce these players.
And it's a really good point about the A-League. And when you go back to 2008, when the A-League or the then W-League started, I mean, that was a massive investment from then Football Australia. And six of the current Matildas actually debuted in that season. And by season two, I think 11 of them were in there. And then it just went on from there. And you just get the sense that this is another time where we have to really double down and go hard on the domestic game moving forward.
At the National Cabinet meeting, which we'll meet in August, if we're still going and if the Matildas can pull off a win in the World Cup, then that would be extraordinary. And I reckon the states and territory leaders will be under enormous pressure to show that they understand how significant this achievement is.
Hey, I wanted to get your thoughts, Emma, on your good friend Melissa Barbieri. Now, she's put the PM, Anthony Albanese, under enormous pressure, saying, stuff your public holiday, give us more cash, invest in the game. So we could basically cover off everything that that you've just mentioned, grassroots, A-League. I think we're bidding for a... We're bidding for an Asian Cup as well in a few years' time. What are your thoughts on Bubs's comments?
Oh, I love Bubs. And the one thing I love about her is she never shies away from what's important, and she stands out in that way. And I think it's so great that we have people like her to use her voice and do it without any fear of backlash. And so, I fully support her coming out in saying that, because I think, you know, the reality is that funding is so important in sport. And it's funny, I remember a conversation we had in the office recently, and it was actually just around, if you've got a kid that wants to go and have a kick at the park, it's very easy to find a footy oval, but it's not always so easy to find a soccer field around the corner. So it's all these little changes that government can help with in funding, in terms of community fields, club fields, and then it works its way up. So I think it's not just about solving the problem of A-Leagues, it's about solving the problems below, and that's where this funding becomes so important. And I think that's why AFL have got such good systems in place. And, you know, obviously the money we're talking that they've had to invest to achieve that is huge, but it all does start somewhere. And it's not to say we have to start from scratch. We're not that far back, but it is about, you know, I do think there are parts of the puzzle that we're missing in the foundation that we have to, you know, fix. And that's what Bubs is looking into.
Elbow, give us some cash.
Can I add to that as well, to say we could have the public holiday and some cash? I would like to issue a challenge, because I know for the US team, Luna Bar, which do some of the, you know, the Cliff Bars or something, I think, they basically gave the US women's team some crazy specific dollar value down to the sort of cents, saying, you know, we're topping you up to match the men's. So I'm putting it out there to some sponsors or to the Australian government itself to really top up that prize purse for the Australians and the rest of the players.
Love it, Fiona Crawford. All right, we're on the home stretch now. I want to get your closing remarks for this Football Belongs special episode, starting with you, author John Didelitzer.
My hot take is that is there any doubt anymore that football is Australia's national sport? That you know, and that's something that we've got to actually start asserting with more courage and bravery. And that was the whole, that underpinned why we put Football Belongs in place first time around, was to try and mount an academic argument or a logical argument as to why soccer could no longer be denied as being a true national game, because it told us, it showed us who we were and reflected who we were. And what we've seen in the last 2 weeks has just reinforced that. You know, we had these, you know, what we hoped were enduring themes of Australian life. And now with this World Cup, we've seen them come to the fore again. And, yeah, hot take, Australia's national sport. The other part, I think, to Emma's point, is it's absolutely imperative that the government are clear partners with us on this journey for the next generation. You know, the A-League club owners can't do it themselves. The players can't continue to subsidise the game's progress through, I mean, this is probably a separate podcast, but I can just imagine the amount of shortcuts you've had to take in your life or things you've had to miss out on.
Dip into your own pocket.
Or give up, you know, in order to pursue life as a professional athlete so that the nation can have this sort of opportunity. So we need the players are subsidising the game's progress, community clubs are subsidising it, the A-League club owners are subsidising it. It's about time we actually had a cohesive plan with government to make sure that those sacrifices are no longer required or can continue but built upon.
Emma Checker?
Yeah, I think JD makes a really good point there that it's for so long it's been the players, you know, fighting these battles and ticking the boxes to create all of this change. But for me, I just hope that this challenges the broader community, government, you know, clubs, leagues, federations, all of the above to be more united. And I think, you know, moving forward, if we unite, what we can achieve in this space can be so great. And so I think it's about dropping the ego and realising that we're all in this together. And we've seen the product that is available and it's about leveraging that moving forward. So I'm positive in the sense that I feel like we are positioned well to do that. I just hope the people that do hold power, you know, we all have power, but when I say hold more power, the higher up, really do step up because this is the time to do it and we can't leave it too late because we don't want to see this opportunity go to waste.
Fiona Crawford.
Yeah, I'd probably just add to that. It's you went through some of the stats. I mean, moving the news, the, you know, AFL now showing, trying to leverage off the popularity of the women's football to show it before the games. I mean, in isolation, even just one of those things happening would just be mind-blowing. And the cumulative effect, as Emma was saying, is I don't think we've even begun to process. But what it is showing to me is that there's the potential. And I think it's opened up a whole level of potential none of us could quite conceptualize. So I just hope that that thinking continues. I really want to see everyone really just, you know, go all out on it and think about what's possible and pursue it.
Outstanding episode, team. John, Emma, Fiona, thanks so much for joining us for this special Football Belongs edition.
Who would have thought 3 years ago that Hayley Raza would be a national hero? Like, that's inconceivable. Yeah, I mean, maybe 5 years ago. Yeah, it's magic. It is magic.
Absolutely, and hopefully more to come. Enjoy the 2023 FIFA World Cup. Go Matildas.
Go Matildas.
Yeah, we'll reconvene after the final once we've won it too. Because we're going to replace Australia v Canada with Australia v Spain.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.